My presentation, as you can see, focuses on evaluating the impact of community open school policies and community access to physical activity facilities on childhood obesity and fitness. Over 5 years ago, I would never have thought of doing such a study. But this is part of the effort that we are doing through our interventions on our policy and environmental influence of obesity. It's part of the larger study by CROP to understand barriers and to physical activity and finding solutions to them. It is also an effort to explore sensitive empirical measures for evaluating long-term impact of real-life, non-experimental policy and environmental interventions. I've been working on this for the past 3 years. I've focused on looking at school and neighborhood environments, and I've built a model where I include some variables. Conflict of interest, I have none. Some policy context. I think 2006 was the watershed year for policies and programs that supported or promoted community access to school physical activity space. CROP was one of those programs that focused on policy and environmental intervention. CROP is a private-public partnership between 8 counties in the San Joaquin Valley and 8 communities in those counties, and is funded by the California Endowment. I chose 2006 as a benchmark because this is when a lot of policy and programs started, especially the wellness policies. Following the WIC Reauthorization Act of 2004, the federal legislation mandated all education entities who were funded, who were participating in national lunch programs to implement wellness policies. And wellness policies are both components of nutrition and physical activity. And one of the things they emphasize is to allow communities to use school space for physical activity. And also, as CROP started looking at, they targeted very underserved communities, and they started looking at finding answer, why do communities exercise? And the answer they got is that there are no safe places for our children to play. So really this has prompted the idea of looking into this issue. You may be wondering, how does a locked school pose challenges to children's physical activity? There is a saying which says, if you build, will they come? I think what we have learned in working in these underserved communities is another saying which you say, if you lock, will they enter? For children, physical activity is what they do. It's part of their normal growth and development. And they engage in physical activity because they want to play. And in most underserved communities, it's really hard because a school may only be the facility that is available. Parks are unsafe, and they are they have no facilities. Streets are also unsafe. So this picture was taken by a 13-year-old child who participated in Crop Photo Voice. And she noticed that her colleagues were passing under the fence to go to a locked school so that they could play. Some actually jumped the fence to try and get to the... So what is the purpose of this presentation? And what are the learning objectives? A typical child spends 9 hours of formal instructions and maybe another 2 to 3 hours when they are not participating in school. And you could imagine that not everybody has opportunity to go to a safe after-school program. So for children where they like physical after-school program, they are looked after their families, maybe grandparents, or maybe somebody else who is in a non-family. And they don't have choices or options where to spend their extra hours and also the weekend hours. So these are the same children at a greater risk for obesity. So the purpose of this presentation is really to share the findings from a recent study that we did that looked at school policies and used them to predict body composition and fitness. We've briefly talked about federal and state policies. I'll now describe how school characteristics and community access and local policies are associated with passing body composition and fitness. And let's just first look at the methods. We did a survey design. We were able to get 385 schools to participate. We had targeted 400, which was really a very high response rate. And we did a random sampling by those four quadrants to make it more representative. Measures, there were three main categories. We had school level policies, including initiatives used to open for public. And then the second was groups allowed to use physical activity facilities. And the third was school characteristic and student demographics. This is really how we define, we made our own definition of policy so that we can get the information that we're interested in. So we looked at, we divided open policy between joint use and non-joint use, and each one was also, we asked whether it was formal or informal. The details of how these were defined are in the appendix. Basically, formal, basically joint use meant that there are contractual agreements, either with the city or the county or the another third party. And those agreements is really to share responsibility, for example, for maintenance and so on. And then formal were those that were based on written guidelines, and informal did not have any written guidelines. And then this is how we defined initiative allowing open policy implementation. Among the schools that were open, we classify them that the initiatives were school system based if they used like Civic Center Act or school board initiative or school district initiative, or community initiative if they used community support, PTA support, and other. Findings. There's a substantial minority. I'm not saying I flipped it in terms of focusing the majority. The substantial minority of schools were small schools, were in small districts, had less than 45% total land, school land, as open space, and had were located in rural areas, and co-op schools were fewer. They were only about 24% because we only have like 9 sites. However, the substantial majority of schools had more than 60% of students on free or reduced price meal. This is an indicator of poverty because those who are eligible have to be at or below federal poverty level. School level policies, about 28% were open to the public. Less than 40 were open, that opened a joint use agreement. The majority were formal policies. Barriers to opening school physical activity facilities. 56% reported socio-cultural barriers, and 47% reported operational barriers. Socio-cultural barriers, we identify liability, safety concern, lack of interest, these were like just few, and lack of cultural conflicts, these were also few, like 2%, but the majority were liability and safety concern. In terms of operational barriers, they reported lack of facilities, 47%, and lack of maintenance concerns. Findings, we ran two types of analysis. The first analysis, which is presented in table one, these are bivariate estimates. These are just 2x2 association between variables. And we first looked at school characteristics and how they were associated with passing both 6 out of 6 tests and body composition. The table shows that only 2 school characteristics had a positive impact on these 2 fitness tests. Having more than 45% open as campus as open space, as well as having less than 60% of students on free reduced meal, were significantly associated. Obviously, you could see on the PowerPoint, the one that's in blue and the one that is in red. You could see that students who had fewer students had almost 6.2% advantage in terms of having more students who pass the fitness test. Obviously, you could see the numbers for the 6 out of 6 are much lower than the ones for body composition. It seems like it's a harder test to pass 6 of them. That's why the numbers are few. And then open school policy was also significant. And again, those that had open policy had 6 percentage points advantage than those that closed. Similarly, on body composition, you could see the differences in performance. Then table 2 looks at the school level policies that were associated with both. These, again, they are bivariate and adjusted estimates. And again, the table shows that 3 school level policies were significantly associated with having higher levels of passing body composition. Joint use agreement, allowing communities and youths, this would be student club, parents and children, communities within the school district were also significantly associated with higher body composition. passing, no, not higher, passing the fitness test for body composition. And also allowing nonprofits, who is also a strong predictor. In contrast, only two policies were significantly associated with passing all six tests. Again, this was youth and communities allowed and allowing nonprofits. So, table three is a step, is fourth step regression analysis. I did that to demonstrate how, in order to explain what impacts the significance of this variable. In step one, I put in only youth groups allowed, and we're measuring whether you allow only up to three or 0 to 2. So this table shows that when analyzed alone, youth and communities allowed and joint use were significantly associated with high proportion of students who passed body composition. But when controlled for free reduced lunch and percent space that was open, these were attenuated. So you could see step one, step two, step three. But in step three, the significance goes away. This means that the impact of joint use agreement and number of youth communities were dependent upon this factor. They were dependent upon proportional students that were on poverty status, maybe of the source community, and also the space, the campus that space that was available. This one is another five-step regression weighted by the number, the total tested. Again, you could see that table four shows that youth communities was an independent predictor for all tests. You could see it's significant throughout. And its effect remained after controlling for school and student demographics. This table also showed that the impact of joint use was not independent. It was influenced by percent children of free reduced meal. You could see that when you add percent free reduced meal, the effects came up. But when you add percent campus, these effects went away. So it means that it was influenced by both. This suggests the impact of joint use on student passing 6 of 6 depended upon poverty status of the community, measured by the free reduced meal, which I explain how the eligibility for this. Meaning that joint use agreements are currently benefiting more children in affluent communities than those in less affluent communities. But that this was contingent upon the availability of campus space. So the last graph. This is a graph of selected crop communities. I try to predict change over time using between 2006, which was when the program started, and now. And the survey was done closer to 2008. We did the survey in 2008. The figure shows mixed results. Two counties, Kern and San Joaquin, show widened gaps between the two group, poverty level groups, between those schools that have more children on more than 60%. You see that the gap is widening as for some reason. This is one of the things I've been calling the technology paradox. because it looks like when we find good solutions to implement, it affects, it has a different effect. Some have a capacity to benefit from those interventions than others. So that's partly explains that widening disparity. However, in one community, which is Madeira, we saw that the gap was lessening. I don't know why. It may be just a random, like a random thing, or it may be real. But it's interesting to see that there's actually, you could, that the measures are sensitive and you could measure some change, but it's way too early to make conclusion about that. Okay. Limitation. This finding should be interpreted cautiously. The relationship between school level and school characteristic should be considered as just association, not non-causal, because this was not an experimental study. And also, it's way too early to expect significant impact of crop because they are just few sites, and also maybe we need more, we need to scale up. Strength, the study uses objective standardized measures of body composition and contributes sensitive measures of pulse and impact on obesity, which could be used to evaluate. And I'm almost done. And it uses a representative sample, so this could be generalized to source. This exploratory study suggests joint use agreement and allowing youth and communities to use physical activity after school hours may be effective in reducing childhood obesity and increasing children who are physically active. However, it also shows that low-income communities have benefited less from policies that allow access to these facilities. And factors that impact include reluctance by some schools to open to the public and due to operation barriers, and percent campus that's open space, and proportion of students who are low-income families. Future effort to reduce child obesity through policy should also be directed at resolving practical barriers and to increase low-income communities to benefit from these policies. Okay, thank you for listening.